From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
We want to know which one you're going to choose, New School University or the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq?
No, I intend to continue in my job as president of this university.
Bob Kerry, New School University president in New York and former Democratic Nebraska senator, is challenged by New School students at a packed forum over his role in the pro-war Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, with close ties to Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Lott. We'll be bringing you excerpts of that forum. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Manhattan District Attorney is expected to call this morning for the full dismissal of charges against the five African-American and Latino young men who were convicted in the notorious 1989 Central Park jogger case. The men were aged between 14 and 16 when they were convicted of participating in the gang rape of the jogger, as well as for a series of muggings in April of 1989. They each served up to 13 years in prison. They were convicted largely based on videotape confessions that many believe were coerced. Much of what the youth said about the rape was incorrect, including when, where, and how it took place. If Manhattan District Attorney Robert Morgenthau recommends dropping the charges today, it will have no immediate impact on the convictions of the five men, Antron McRae, Kevin Richardson, Yusuf Salam, Raymond Santana, and Kari Wise. Only the judge presiding over the case, Charles Tejada, can vacate the guilty verdicts, a decision that is considered likely but not imminent. Newsday is reporting that this could be the largest multi-defendant case ever overturned on faulty confessions. The case was revisited earlier this year when convicted rapist and murderer Matthias Reiss confessed that he alone had raped the woman in Central Park on April 19, 1989. DNA evidence backed up Reiss's confession. No other biological evidence was left at the crime scene. Reiss was never questioned at the time of the crime, but the New York Times is reporting that an NYPD sex crimes detective in 1989 had determined that Reiss was a prime suspect in another Central Park rape that occurred just two nights before the April 19th attack. But the New York Times reports the detective was soon transferred to another case, and Reiss was never questioned. He would go on to rape and kill one woman and rape three more on the Upper East Side. He was never linked to the Central Park jogger case, which at the time was considered a closed case. A reconstruction of the night of the crime by the New York Times has also displayed a significant conflict. At the time the jogger was believed to have been attacked, the police also claimed the teenagers were involved in muggings elsewhere in the park, but no evidence beyond the tainted videotape confessions implicate the boys in any of the muggings either. And the New York Times reports today that Mr. Morgenthau's views on their involvement could not be learned, but that his senior aides have said privately they do not believe the boys played any part in the rape. At the time of this broadcast, people are now gathering in front of federal court calling for all charges to be dropped against the young men. We will go to the courthouse if the decision comes down, or if the decision that the Manhattan prosecutor has made comes down during this broadcast. Iraqi President Saddam Hussein today urged the Iraqi people to support UN weapons inspections as a welcome opportunity to disprove U.S. allegations that his government has weapons of mass destruction. In a holiday greeting to Iraqi leaders, Saddam Hussein said he agreed to the inspections, quote, to keep our people out of harm's way in the face of U.S. threats. Meanwhile, President Bush shot back at UN Secretary General Kofi Annan yesterday. Bush dismissed reports that the weapons inspections are going well and said Hussein is not somebody who looks like he's interested in complying. Kofi Annan had challenged the Bush administration's constant criticism of the inspections, saying that Iraqi cooperation, quote, seems to be good following the inspectors' first week of work. Inspectors have so far found nothing. Yesterday, they visited the old Osirik nuclear site. London and Washington have claimed satellite photographs show the Iraqis were engaged in secret new construction there, but inspectors found no clear signs of the infrastructure needed to enrich uranium for nuclear weapons. The front page of today's New York Daily News blares, "Saddam has gas." But inspectors say they expected to find the dozen or so shells containing mustard gas at an old weapons plant and were making sure they hadn't been moved. The Iraqis even broke with past tradition yesterday to allow a surprise inspection of one of President Hussein's palaces. The relatively smooth progress of the weapons inspections is putting the Bush administration in a bind. Former Chief of Intelligence Planning for the Air Force, John Rothrock, told the Christian Science Monitor, "Obviously, there's a policy train wreck developing between the White House's necessary timeline, if there's going to be combat, and the timeline that's evolving with the UN inspections. In the most likely scenario," he said, "the administration will have to seize upon some issue within the inspection process that will lead the White House to throw up its hands and conclude the inspections process is bankrupt." But the Los Angeles Times reports the White House fears Saddam Hussein has gained the upper hand in the public relations war by complying with inspectors and is trying to shift focus. Repeating a refrain he began Monday, Bush said, "This isn't about inspectors. The issue is whether Saddam Hussein will disarm." The Pentagon is planning to call up as many as 10,000 reservists in the next few days for security duty in the U.S. and abroad. The New York Times reports it's likely to be only the first wave of new call-ups as Bush prepares for a war with Iraq. The Sierra Club is threatening to disband the Glen Canyon chapter in Utah because its leaders are speaking out against the U.S. threat of invading Iraq. The Utah group is openly defying a decision by the country's oldest environmental group to avoid a formal stance on the war. The Glen Canyon chapter says the rule is a gag order. United Airlines is on the brink of bankruptcy today after the U.S. government turned down its appeal for a $1.8 billion loan guarantee. United is the world's second largest airline with 83,000 workers. And East Timor imposed a curfew on the capital, Dili, yesterday after a day of rioting in which up to five people were shot dead and the prime minister's house was burned. Early yesterday, hundreds of students protested outside police headquarters against the arrest of another student. Witnesses say police began firing into the crowd. A Reuters photographer said police shot a protester. Another journalist said a few protesters had gunshot wounds and others were beaten. Students and others then began rioting throughout the city. And Secretary of State General Colin Powell yesterday announced the U.S. government will give the nation of Colombia an additional $573 million in military aid next year. The amount includes $100 million to protect an oil pipeline. To date, the U.S. has given the nation $1.8 billion in military aid under the program Plan Colombia. Powell also announced Washington has already delivered 72 helicopters to Colombia and expects to renew a joint program in the Andean region to force down or even shoot down suspected drug-laden planes. The program was suspended April 2001 when Peruvian jet fighters shot down a U.S. missionary group's plane, killing an American mother and her infant daughter. The Peruvian military was acting on intelligence given by the private U.S. military firm DynCorp. are listening to Democracy Now!, Marlon Cherry, drummer, here live in our Firehouse studio. This is the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The hawks in Washington are ratcheting up their campaign to build public support for an invasion of Iraq at a time when polls suggest a decline in public enthusiasm for a war with Iraq. A new group has formed. It's called the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq. Its goal, to replace the government of Iraq with one more in keeping with U.S. geopolitical interests by any means necessary. The group has close ties to Vice President Dick Cheney, War Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, and the next Senate Majority Leader, Trent Lott. Its members include former Secretary of State George Shultz, Senator John McCain, and former Democratic Senator Bob Kerry, who is now the president of New School University in New York. Jim Loeb writes in this month's Foreign Policy in Focus report that the committee's president is Randy Shuneman, Lott's former chief national security advisor, who last year worked in Rumsfeld's office as a consultant on Iraq policy. He says the chairman of the new committee, Bruce Jackson, is a former vice president of Lockheed Martin, who chaired the Republican Party Platform Subcommittee for National Security and Foreign Policy when Bush ran for president in 2000. Jackson also served as chair of the U.S. Committee to Expand NATO, which spearheaded a so-called citizens' campaign to persuade Congress to ratify NATO's eastward expansion in 1998. Jackson resigned from Lockheed earlier this year to, in his words, pursue democracy building projects full time. The new committee on the invasion on the liberation of Iraq appears to be a spinoff from the Project for a New American Century, a front group consisting mainly of neoconservative Jews and heavy hitters from the Christian right, whose public recommendations on fighting President Bush's war against terrorism and alignment with Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon in the Second Intifada have participated to a remarkable degree in the administration's policy course. Jim Loeb goes on to write, committee member and former Senator Bob Kerry has publicly called for regime change in Iraq, but he wears more than one hat. Kerry is also the president of New School University in New York. Students at the New School are furious that their president is using his position as university president to publicly support a war they feel misrepresents the values and traditions of their school. The New School University, formerly known as the New School for Social Research, was founded on the pacifist principles of Charles Beard and James Harvey Robinson. They left Columbia University when Columbia fired two other professors because they opposed the entry of the U.S. into World War II. Just 2 weeks ago, the students called for a meeting with their university president. When Kerry did not respond, they occupied his office and demanded that a public forum be held. The students claim that Bob Kerry lost his temper and cursed at them, but finally agreed to the forum. That public forum was held yesterday at the New School University. There were two people on each side. The student representatives are Colin Walsh and Ann Kirkham. They debated Bob Kerry and called for his resignation. Kerry was joined by Mustafa Tlili of the World Policy Institute, who spoke in Kerry's defense. At the forum, each panel member, each side was allowed 8 minutes to make their case, and then the students and others in the community, as well as Democracy Now!, questioned them. University President and former Senator Bob Kerry spoke first.
Well, first of all, let me thank the university students who came into my office and requested, actually I think demanded was what they did, that a forum of this kind be held. We have attempted to discuss in good faith this forum after that appearance in my office. And I do thank them. I called attention during my convocation speech to the expression of concern that especially Lang College students had last year with the Bush detainment policies. And I very much appreciate the opportunity to have a forum of this kind. And I most particularly appreciate that there are students at this university who care deeply about this issue, even if that concern and care is directed at me as a consequence of my holding a different position than theirs. I would not, under any circumstances, like this university to be one of those where students don't care about what arguably at the moment is one of the top two or three issues that the United States of America is facing. Let me lay out my case for how I've reached the conclusion that I've reached. First of all, I assert, and I'll present evidence, that a military operation can accomplish a good thing. And indeed, as someone who voted against the first Gulf War in 1991, I watched in 1992 the United States unwilling to participate in a military operation in Cambodia. I participated in an effort to reach agreement between the parties and get the United Nations peacekeeping force inside of Cambodia. And though the United States didn't participate in that military effort provided the stability that allowed the Khmer Rouge to go out of business. Pol Pot is now dead. You can go to Cambodia and travel wherever you want. That was not true in 1992. And it did not happen simply because people of goodwill decided to live peacefully. It happened because it was the United Nations force inside of Cambodia providing the stability necessary for that to occur. I saw likewise in Bosnia in 1995. And to be clear, it was a very close vote in the United States Senate, and there wasn't a majority in the House of Representatives. The American people were talking about Vietnam all over again, unwilling to send military forces, thought it would be a quagmire. The language was something to the effect that they've been fighting for hundreds of years. How in God's name can we possibly make a difference? Well, in August of 1995, I tried to get into Sarajevo and couldn't. There was a number of State Department employees who were killed a few days earlier, and a 120-millimeter rocket hit a market on the 27th of August, the day I was supposed to be there, and killed 80-plus people who happened just to be out there that day in a cafe in Sarajevo. Today, as a result of a NATO military operation, and the United States, in this case, participating in the peacekeeping operation, and quite significant, George Bush in the campaign opposed that and said he was going to bring forces home. You can fly to Sarajevo and shop. That didn't happen because people of goodwill decided to live peacefully. It happened as a consequence of a military effort. Now, maybe some people in this audience believe that the Bosnia operation, the Kosovo operation, and others were a bad thing. I think they were good. Terrible things happened. Terrible things always happen in these kinds of military operations. I think it was a mistake for the United States of America not to get involved militarily in Rwanda. I would assert that we pulled out of Somalia too quickly after we got ambushed in the fall of 1993. We withdrew because we were afraid of further casualties. I'm not arguing that our war in Vietnam was morally correct or that we did a good thing there, that we didn't do terrible things in Central America, or that it's always been perfect. I'm simply saying, as I observe the world, that oftentimes it's not. There is a relationship between the capacity of people to live in peace and to live freely and to do what they want to do on their own as a result of the United States participating in military efforts. In Iraq, after the Gulf War, the United Nations passed a Security Council resolution authorizing a military force. And in many ways, the current debate about our Iraq policy is one that presents the audience with false choices, military operation or nothing. We have a military operation in place today. We have since 1991. And it has three very significant components, and we've lost Americans. Americans have died, and we've spent a great deal of money every single year. We have troops stationed in Saudi Arabia. We have troops stationed in Kuwait. And especially those troops in Saudi Arabia, because it's close to Mecca and Medina, have provoked significant opposition, resulting in 1996 and 19 airmen being killed. The embargo on the waters of the Persian Gulf also are quite risky. The no-fly zones that were first flown by U.S., French, and British pilots, now just by U.S. and British pilots. If you haven't been to northern Iraq, or if you know nothing about northern Iraq, you should learn something. Because without those flights, there's an awful lot of Iraqi Kurds that would die. And we simply don't have the moral choice that lots of other nations do of quitting. Because if we stop that military operation, there are 7 Republican Guard divisions in the north prepared to move in the moment we stop flying those missions. And again, President Bush almost stopped doing that against opposition from people like myself and others. And so part of my conclusion is that I see a military operation in place right now. And I simply do not believe that a continuation of that military operation will allow us to get to where we want to go. And I believe from firsthand knowledge and firsthand conversations with Iraqis, Shia, Sunni, Kurds, that they have the capacity to govern themselves. And you can say that they don't have the capacity. I've heard lots of skeptics say they don't. And I would urge you to go to Cambodia, urge you to go to Bosnia, because the same arguments were thrown up in 1992. Don't send U.S. forces back into Southeast Asia. And we didn't, to our shame. The Japanese led the military force. Don't send military troops because Bosnia can't possibly govern themselves. Because Dayton is flawed in lots of different ways. And I believe that the Iraqi people can govern themselves. And I believe it will indeed be enormously beneficial, not to us, but to the people of Iraq. I do not reach this conclusion as a consequence of fearing weapons of mass destruction. There's a great irony in that because now the pivotal issue is whether or not Iraq gives up their weapons of mass destruction, whether or not this Sunday on the 8th they will declare to the satisfaction of the Bush administration that their weapons of mass destruction have given up. And I'm deeply troubled, indeed oppose the
Thank
use...
Thank you, Mr. Kerry. Your time is up.
New School University President Bob Kerry speaking at the forum demanded by students to challenge his role as a spokesperson both for the university as well as his role in the new organization that has been formed, the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq. When we come back, we'll hear the students' response and then the audience has their questions and comments. Stay with us. Marlon Cherry live in our Firehouse studio here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue with the New School Forum, it was a packed audience yesterday in Lower Manhattan as hundreds of people came for the forum that was called by students challenging the president of New School University, Bob Kerry, and former Democratic Nebraska senator for his role in the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq. The student representatives who spoke at the forum were Colin Walsh, but first, Ann Kirkham, a graduate student at New School.
Good afternoon. Thank you, everybody, for coming. My name is Ann Kirkham, political science graduate faculty. First of all, I want to mention that during the Iran-Iraq war, the United States was funding Saddam Hussein, including giving him the means to build chemical and biological weapons. It's interesting to note that George Shultz, who's also a member of the Committee to Liberate Iraq, was Reagan's Secretary of State at that time. With all the rewriting of history going on these days, we need to keep the facts in mind. One thing is painfully obvious. The supposed war on terrorism is nothing but a geostrategic attempt to secure petroleum reserves. Attempts to link Saddam Hussein's regime to the attacks of September 11, 2001 have been unsuccessful. Furthermore, plans to get rid of Saddam have been in the pipeline, as it were, for years. In July 2001, the Wall Street Journal reported that in 1998, members of the Clinton and Bush I administrations proposed a formal strategy for deposing the Hussein regime. This was endorsed by 10 individuals who are now senior members of the Bush II administration, including Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Paul Wolfowitz. George W. Bush also campaigned in 2000 on a platform which included removing Hussein from power. American troops have been on the ground near Iraq's northern border, and airstrikes have been conducted against the country for years. Most importantly and most tragically, however, the sanctions imposed on Iraq at the end of the Gulf War have not only killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians, the majority of them children, but also contribute to worldwide hatred of the U.S. and its ongoing atrocities. If the Committee to Liberate Iraq is so concerned about the well-being of Iraqi citizens, why have its members, including Mr. Kerry, not accompanied humanitarian workers to deliver much-needed medical supplies to hospitals in Iraqi cities? Why have they done nothing to end human suffering on the ground in Iraq? The sanctions have been in place, and their effects well-publicized, for over a decade. Are Bob Kerry, George Shultz, Richard Perle, Gene Kirkpatrick, John McCain, and Joe Lieberman, as well as Bruce P. Jackson, the former president, vice president of Lockheed Martin, really concerned with helping the Iraqi people? I think not. The humanitarian rhetoric this committee is using represents yet another attempt to foist the same party line on the frightened American people while pursuing self-interested goals of consolidating American world domination and fulfilling corporate greed for non-renewable, non-sustainable natural resources. It has no place being promoted publicly by the administration of the New School University, formerly the New School for Social Research. Thank you.
President Kerry, it's my belief that your position on the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq is entirely inconsistent with the history of this university. Charles Beard and James Harvey Robinson, when they left Columbia out of protest for the stifling of free speech, specifically anti-war speech on that campus, and they came here to found this university, I think would be outraged by what's going on. Free speech has been entirely stifled on this campus. While you are taking a very public position, while you're writing editorials for the Washington Post and using the name of this university and representing this university to take a pro-war stance, speech is being stifled on this campus. The president of Veterans for Peace, David Klein, was canceled from speaking on this campus. Asif Ullah, the youth anti-militarism coordinator for the War Resisters League, was canceled. Howard Zinn was scheduled to speak this December. And through the bureaucratic processes of your administration, specifically the new policies of your administration that have just been implemented this summer, have barred Howard Zinn from speaking on our campus this December. You may claim that you have the right to freedom of speech, and I agree that you do. I just do not agree that that right includes dragging the name of my school through the press backing this war. You seem to equate liberation and democracy with war. I disagree. I think that there are other ways. I think that the fact that the only method you see to obtain liberation and democracy as through war is narrow-minded. I think that there are other ways. And specifically, I think that the tradition of this university shows other ways. I think that the University in Exile, which was founded at this school to provide a place for people who had to flee Europe, give a great example. If you're concerned about the liberation and the well-being of people in Iraq, why don't we found a university in exile at our school now for academics from Iraq? There are other ways. You've brought your ties to the defense industry, to this school. There is a new board of trustees member who is from Allied Signal, part of Honeywell Corporation. You are honoring George David, the CEO of United Technologies, in January at a fundraising dinner for this school. United Technologies being the company which makes Black Hawk helicopters and sells them to Israel. That is inappropriate for this school. These Black Hawk helicopters are killing people in Palestine in a terrible, terrible war there. How much money do you have invested personally in the defense industry? I'd like to know. When you have a chance to respond to that, maybe later you can answer that. It is unacceptable to me, it is unacceptable to many students, that you soil the good name of this institution to promote war. To To you I say, not in my name will you use it, launch a PR campaign for war from this school. Not in my name will you militarize this school, bringing in blood money to fund my education. No way. I don't want a part of that. You suggest that the lives of the few American soldiers are valuable. I agree that they are, and I want no more Americans dead anywhere. But you completely overlook the deaths of all of the Iraqis, many of who are innocent, many of who are children, the deaths that are caused by our bombing raids, the deaths that are caused by our sanctions. I have a huge problem with that. Not in my name will you kill will you promote the killing of the innocent Iraqis. Since you've been at this university, you have been mired in controversy. Your war record has come up. There's accusations made, indeed accusations by the man who saved your life, Gerhard Kahn, that you massacred a village. I don't know exactly what to think. All I know is that it's controversial. I have a lot of questions. I think that, you know, from your past war records, you should probably have look a little closer at war. You've just listed a long list of military interventions that you support. I'd like to know what military interventions you don't support. It sounds to me like most of these recent military interventions that have been suggested you do.
Thank you.
Please resign.
Thank you.
That was Colin Walsh. They then had a little debate because Professor Mustafa clearly wanted to speak. Bob Kerry had used up all of his time, but the students agreed to allow this. This is Professor Mustafa Tlili.
I should have the possibility to speak. I tell you why. I perfectly understand that you set rules. But you seem to have set rules that seem to confuse the situation rather than clarify it. You seem to think that I share the opinion of President Kerry. I may on some aspects, I may not on other aspects. And therefore, I would beg you to give me the floor to say a few things. Thank you.
Again, each side had been allowed 8 minutes, but Bob Kerry, the president of New School, had used all of his side's time. The students now say they will allow the
yes,
time.
Yes, Mr. Tlili, these ground rules were set by the two opposing forces.
I think it is important in the name of free speech that he have at least 2 minutes to speak.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you very much.
You have 2 minutes, Mr. Tlili. Mr. Tlili will be able to express his views when you ask questions.
Let me start by saying that, thank you.
You're welcome.
Madam Chairman. Let me first say this. This forum is the third dialogue session that we are participating in. I just came back from one last night at the Embassy of Qatar, where the ambassador of Saudi Arabia, the ambassador of Pakistan, the ambassador of Malaysia, the ambassador of Jordan, of Egypt, the ambassador of Turkey, were all gathered to honor Bob Kerry. There were other ambassadors from the Security Council of the United Nations. I must here, just in terms of fairness and to set the record straight, I do not discuss any other aspect that was discussed here. I am not party to that. All I can tell you, in all honesty, that I haven't heard a single word but of praise, of congratulations, and of support for an initiative that has been taken by Bob Kerry in this university, and that is to launch together with myself and a few others, a major program of dialogues between the Muslim world and the Western world. I just came back from Granada, Spain, where 2 weeks ago we organized our first international conference, where representatives from throughout the Arab and Muslim world, as well as from the Western world, both Europeans and Americans, gathered precisely to discuss issues of this kind. And they were there thanks to the tremendous effort that Bob Kerry put into this. And last night, he was the guest of honor, and he was honored for this, precisely for this initiative. So that is the second point. The third point that I would like to make here, and that is about the process of what is going on now in the international community. I came from the United Nations. I spent 26 years at the United Nations and participated in many other causes, including the fight against apartheid, other questions of decolonizations. I can tell you this, that the process that is going on at the United Nations is the most important one. The talk there is not about war. The talk is about implementing a resolution of the Security Council that was voted by 15 members of the Security Council. That means unanimously, without a single dissent. Now, you may have observed that the administration finally has made up its mind and came to the United Nations. No one talks about war there. Everyone expects the implementation of a resolution. We have to wait and see. There is a process, and we should simply banish the word war from our vocabulary at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Tlili.
And that was Professor Mustafa Tlili of the World Policy Institute at the New School University, where there was a debate held yesterday between the students at the New School, who we will hear from in just a minute again as they respond to questions of the community, as well as students and Democracy Now!, and Bob Kerry as well, the former senator and now president of the New School University. This is Democracy Now! Back in a minute. Marlon Cherry, African drummer, here in the studios of Democracy Now! At Downtown Community Television. You are listening to the War and Peace Report. You've been hearing a public forum at New School University where students were calling for the resignation of their university's president, Bob Kerry. Kerry has become one of the national spokespeople for the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, an organization with close ties to the Pentagon. Students are upset that Kerry is using his position as university president to take a pro-war stance at a school that has a tradition of pacifism and anti-war activism. We now go to the question and answer session that took place after the panel members spoke. It begins with a question of a New York environmental activist, Mitch Cohen.
My question has to do with environment in a way. During the bombing of Iraq in 1990 and 91, it was not simply that people were not given food by the government, but that the U.S. bombed all the sanitation facilities in Iraq and took them out. They bombed all the water supply and water purification facilities so that people didn't have clean water, and dropped tons of depleted uranium that poisoned the entire water supply and the environment, such that today in Iraq, all the way through the past 12 years, 10 years, there's a large increase in the number of children who are dying from leukemia and all sorts of other diseases related to that war that have nothing to do with whether or not Saddam Hussein gives them food or not. This is a result, and coming to my question, that the U.S. officials estimate between 100,000 and 200,000 Iraqi civilians were killed directly by the bombing itself, let alone what happened as a consequence of those bombings.
Would you get to the question, please?
So my question is, do you agree, Mr. Kerry, with Secretary of State Madeleine Albright when she said she thinks the price is worth it?
Yes, I do. Now, let me also say that I do think it would have been a more complete statement to make the observation of what Saddam Hussein did to the Kuwaiti oil fields before he withdrew, cited by many in the environmental movement as the most destructive environmental act in a considerable period of time. I mean, I don't think it's a balanced presentation. I do believe that the liberation of Iraq is not only possible, but it's desirable. And I'm not up here to argue that the United States has always done the right thing. I voted against the first Gulf War resolution out of concern for the likely impact that war would have. But I don't think it's arguable to say that U.S. military intervention has always been bad. Indeed, Mustafa, who I love, says the United States has got to solve the Palestinian problem. Now, we're not going to solve that with an energy policy. We're not going to say, well, we'll solve that. We'll start using hydrogen. That's not how you solve it.
Maybe stop funding Israel?
No, sir.
Are you suggesting that?
No. No.
At another time, I'd be glad to debate you on that, but this is not the place for discussing that.
Yeah, I'd be glad to.
Thank you. Next question, please.
I have a two-part question. I'm Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!, and I just got off the cell phone with Frieda Berrigan, who is an employee here. She works at the World Policy Institute. She couldn't be here today. She's with her family in Baltimore because her father, Phil Berrigan, is dying of cancer right now. But they formulated a question for you, and we interviewed her today, and they wanted to ask you. They said, as an infantry platoon officer in World War II, Phil Berrigan recently described himself as an accomplished killer. But his experience in war burned into him the belief that war is a sin and an abomination, saying he felt it was imperative as a veteran to work for peace and justice and has spent 11 of the last 30 years of his life in prison for his beliefs. He's now lying dying of cancer. His family and community are asking that you fulfill your responsibility as a veteran and take up that work as well, and wanted your response to that. Would you describe yourself, too, as an accomplished killer, and would you dedicate yourself to that? That's the first part of the question for them, since Frieda couldn't be here. The second part is a follow-up to your news conference last year, to just re-ask the question I asked you at that time. At that time, you held a news conference because you were dealing with the exposé.
You have 30 seconds left.
That talked about you being involved in the massacre of about a dozen Vietnamese civilians, women, and children. I asked you then, you said you needed more time to think about it. I said, it's not just people like you who pull the trigger and kill civilians who bear different levels of responsibility. What do you think of setting up a war crimes tribunal that would bring people perhaps like you, but more importantly, the architects like Henry Kissinger before it, and then the decision would be made about whether you have committed war crimes
or not? Your time is up.
Would you support such a commission?
Well, out of great respect for Philip Berrigan, I'll answer the question, even though it's totally irrelevant to this discussion. I'll answer the question out of respect. You don't like the way I do it, but I do believe that I've dedicated my life to fighting for peace and justice.
Bob Carey.
And you can groan and disagree and say you don't like the positions that I took when I was governor or the positions that I took when I was in the Senate or the work that I've done over the course of my life, but do feel like I've been called, in part as a result of my own memory and of what war is and what I did in that war as to whether I'm an accomplished killer. I certainly was at the time. I don't believe I am today. That's what I absolutely was trained to do. And as the War Crimes Tribunal, let me make it clear. You know, the issue here is not people like myself. We were investigated all the time. I'm not immune from prosecution today, then, or any time in the future. GIs get prosecuted all the time. It is a much more relevant question having to do with policymakers. I support the International Criminal Court. And believe if the question had come to me as to a way to set up mechanisms that would be peaceful resolutions of conflict, I would cite the criminal court as one way to do it. Indeed, at last night's dinner, one of the ambassadors that was there from Jordan has the responsibility to try to find the individual to be the lead prosecutor. It's going to be exceptionally difficult to get that done without the United States involvement.
30 seconds left.
But I don't... I do not support the idea of setting up an independent tribunal just to deal with the Vietnam War. I do support the idea of establishing a permanent international criminal court that could be an enormous deterrent.
Finally, would you support the barring of CIA recruitment on campus? Would you support the barring of CIA recruitment here on campus and professors working with the CIA?
Oh, God. I don't think I would. No, I mean, I don't believe I would. I think I'd limit it if people are offended by it and see that as a... Well, then I would limit it so that you weren't... okay, so I will make certain that the CIA doesn't ask you if you're interested in going to work for them. But it may be that I have students here that have an interest in that as a career. And I don't believe that it's an ignoble profession.
Do professors have contracts with the CIA?
I'm sorry, Mr. Carey, your time is up. We'll take the next question here.
We've talked a lot today about democracy and about the mission of the New School University. Mr. Carey, I would love to see you resign from the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq. That said, in regards to your presidency at New School University, I think this is the sort of question that in a civilized society should be answered by a democratic election. I think that's how things should be done. And my question to you is, do you believe that university students should have the right to democratically elect their president?
No.
And if so, why not?
I just don't. I mean, I think you'd... first of all, if my trustees came to me tomorrow and said, your job is going to be dependent upon getting democratically elected by the university, or community, by the students, I would resign. So if you want me to resign, persuade the trustees to. You can't run a university that way. Now, at the same time, I've got to pay attention to what students want, what they're trying to get done. I've got to do everything possible to make certain that they get the best education, that they have the opportunity to participate in debate. I got to say, what Colin said earlier is one part correct, one part not. I did get angry. There's no question I got angry. I mean, when he says, I called the office on the 14th, you called me back on the 15th, and we hadn't heard in 5 days. And so we come in, and in your language, invaded your office. Now, I just got to lay myself at the mercy of this court. Imagine that happened to you. Would you get angry? I got angry. I shouldn't have. And I first said, okay, I'll agree to the form. And then they said, well, we won't agree to it. We want to have a date. We want to have a time. And I got even angrier, and I got up to leave and came back and picked the date and the time. Then they wanted it in writing. At that point, I said, we've gone a little too far.
And wasn't your response, first you wanted it in writing, then you wanted it in blood?
That was your response.
Yeah.
I wasn't there.
Please.
People have said that.
Yeah, that was my response. Look.
Mr. Carey, your time is up.
Yeah.
And
thank
I will
God.
Remind the panelists... I will remind the panelists that you have set these ground rules. I would like you to adhere to them. Where are we? Here.
I have...
Question.
Yes. Mr. Carey, I think that there is one thing that has been not made clear enough at this forum, and that is...
the students then put out a sign that said resign, and a number of people in the audience picked up that sign as well. And you've been listening to a discussion that was held at the New School, a packed overflow audience at New School University, in a forum that had been called for, demanded by students who had occupied New School University President Bob Kerry's office several weeks ago, demanding that he account for his outspoken stance on behalf of the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq. They said that his position did not fit with his position as president of the New School University, which was founded by professors who had stood up for professors who had been fired from Columbia University protesting World War II. And if you'd like a copy of today's program, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. The final student called for him to either resign as New School University president or resign from the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq. The president, Bob Kerry, said he had plans to do neither. Bob Kerry is a former senator from the state of Nebraska. You are listening to Democracy Now! As we go to our top story today, as I said at the top of the program, as we are broadcasting now, just several blocks from here, people are rallying around the case of the dismissal of charges against those young men who had been convicted and served time for the Central Park jogger rape. The Manhattan District Attorney is expected to call today for the full dismissal of charges against the five African American and Latino young men who are convicted in the 89 case. The young men were between 14 and 16 when they were convicted for participating in the gang rape of the jogger, as well as for a series of muggings in April 1989. They served up to 13 years in prison, the last one just recently released. They were convicted largely based on videotape confessions that many believe were coerced. Much of what the youth said about the rape was incorrect, including when, where, and how it took place. We are joined right now in our studio by Michael Warren, who is an attorney for three of the young men in the case. He has just been at the rally. As we broadcast this, in some places the decision may already be made, but at this point it has not, at least what the prosecutor is calling for now.
That's correct, Amy. We have not received a copy of the decision. This decision, in accordance with the judge's order, is required to be filed by 12 noon today. We will be going up fairly soon, shortly after I leave here, in an attempt to try to ascertain whether a copy is available. And if it is available, we'll peruse it, and we will be engaging in a press conference this afternoon around 1 o'clock in the office building of Councilman Bill Perkins on the 16th floor at 250 Broadway. I think that this is a people's victory, if it's consistent with what we've been hearing in terms of the response from the district attorney's office, the tireless efforts of those 13 years ago who struggled on behalf of these young men and young boys at that time and their families. I think it recognizes a couple of important things. That number one, that you cannot conduct an interrogation in the dark. It has to be videotaped, which is one of the proposed pieces of legislation that comes out of this case, sponsored by Councilman Perkins, to seeking a complete videotaping of interrogation from the very beginning and the very end. And because otherwise what you are left with are simply the end result of a process which has, in we know, traditionally become illicit because of different motivations of police officers. If it's videotaped from the very beginning to the very end, then obviously it protects a number of different entities involved, particularly those individuals who are subject to that type of interrogation.
Yesterday you held a news conference, the front page of Newsday today, all charges must go. Defendants' advocates insist on full exoneration from Morgenthau today. Front page of the New York Times, prosecutor is said to back dismiss missiles and 89 jogger rape. It even, in the piece, says that senior aides have said privately they do not believe the boys played any part in the rape. So that even goes to the issue of whether this is a technicality or not.
Yeah, it's not merely a technicality. I mean, it goes beyond being a technicality, as we've said all along. I mean, it goes to the question, really, of innocence. There has never been a basis for asserting that these boys were involved in the rape, just as there is no basis for asserting that they're involved in any other crimes that were committed in the park that night. During the course of the trial, there was no identification by any of the other witnesses. There was no property that was introduced into evidence that was connected to any of these young boys. No independent basis whatsoever. And I think that the fact that Matias Reyes has come forward is significant because
this is the serial rapist and murderer who earlier this year said that he was the one who raped the jogger. He did it alone, and in fact, the DNA evidence corroborates this.
Correct, and I think that the significance of that is not only this doesn't simply stem from his confession alone, but also the fact that there is a scientific basis, as there was back then, but certainly as a result of the retesting, that clearly indicates that he and he alone committed these acts. I mean, the police department have been doing a number of things lately in an attempt to try to strip him of his credibility as a witness. And one of the things was to advance a person by the name of Dr. Kurtz, who has been in the news media recently talking about, and Dr. Kurtz was the surgeon who treated the jogger victim, but talking about how the injuries on the jogger victim were caused by a knife or a sharp object. Well, that is contra and it certainly refutes his actual trial testimony, in which he essentially stated that he didn't have a clue as to what those injuries were caused by.
Juan Gonzalez has a good piece today on it in
yes,
the New York Daily
absolutely,
News.
Absolutely.
Well, Juan will be joining us tomorrow, and we are going to be doing a full review of this case when the prosecutor's recommendation comes down. Will you then be suing?
Well, we like to wait for the decision from the DA's office, their response, ultimately a decision from the court, to bask in the importance of the threshold significance of clearing the names of these young boys. Then we will decide what road we travel and how we travel that road.
Well, Michael Warren, thank you for being with us. We'll go out today with the chants of the rally. That's just a few blocks from us right now. Again, the Manhattan District Attorney expected to call today for the full dismissal of charges against the five young men who are convicted of the Central Park robbery. The Central Park jogger rape.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you. Also want to let people know that the American Friends Service Committee called in and said there will be a protest in front of the Committee to Liberate Iraq in Washington on Human Rights Day from 4:30 to 7. That is December 10th from 4:30 until 7. That does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Mike Burke, Angie Karen, Anna Noguera, Alex Wolf, Mike DeFilippo as our engineer, with help from Rich today, and thank you for that. www.democracynow.org is our website. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at democracynow.org. Juan will be with us tomorrow. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.
Tell the DA, try to pay.